Hi there, I'm Brett Worthington with you for A Big Country here on RN. This week, an insight into Australia's multi-million dollar horse breeding industry will take you from conception to birth. If you're sick of mowing the lawn every weekend, perhaps you should consider investing in a goat. A company on the Sunshine Coast is hiring out four-legged lawn mowers as weed busters. And it's rehearsal time for students enrolled at the Longreach School of Distance Education. They're busy practicing for their end-of-year musical via phone and webcam.
Good afternoon, Bo Peep. Casey Lasker.
Distance ed kids are something unique. It's an opportunity for them that they wouldn't get not attending school on a daily basis. So it's something different, and it's giving them an opportunity to do what our city kids get to do.
Good afternoon, Wee Willie Winky, Alice Alexander.
Making sure country kids don't miss out. You'll hear from the cast very, very shortly. But let's start our travels today in the Hunter Valley, where there's some important business about to get underway.
When the stallion comes in, he's usually in the barn for... Our stallions are pretty good, a minute or two. Some stallions do take longer. He'll there and he'll be looking at the mare, and he might have a sniff for a minute or two because he needs to get prepared as well before he mounts the mare.
The stallion I Am Invincible has a busy day ahead. It's 6 o'clock in the morning and he's about to cover the first of three mares for the day. You get to witness the cycle of life here at Yarraman Park in Scone. At one end of the stud in this covering barn, a foal is about to be conceived. And at the other end, out in the paddock, a new foal is being welcomed into the world. Hello, I'm Karen Shrewsbury. Around half of Australia's thoroughbred horses are produced here in the Hunter Valley in New South Wales. Sheikhs and sports stars are among those investing tens of thousands of dollars to produce pedigree offspring and hopefully a Melbourne Cup winner. I'm spending the day with Yarraman Park stud manager Shane Wright and his staff to see what it takes to breed a winner.
Morning, guys.
The sun is rising to reveal 1,200 hectares of manicured horse-filled paddocks, and there's been a new addition overnight. So, Shane, who do we have here?
This is amazing, and our smart missile filly that was born a quarter to three this morning. This is just first check. Night duty, have been looking after it all night. Ports are always a nice normal foaling. It all happened quite uneventful and quickly.
And why do they foal mostly at night?
It goes back to when they were running wild in herds hundreds and thousands of years ago, really. It's a protective thing at night time. It's a lot easier in the dark to kind of go away from the herd, give yourself a little bit of time and less chance of predators around also.
Right. Yes, and just before we have a quick check over of her, just explain your setup here. You call these paddocks the maternity ward.
This is basically the maternity ward you're standing in now. There's a couple of paddocks there that are all floodlit, and when the mares are roughly 2 to 3 weeks away from foaling, they move into this area. This is where they become under 24-hour supervision. So the paddock's there, there's three paddocks going down, and as we feel the mares are getting closer and their signs are becoming more noticeable, they move closer and closer to the foaling unit itself. Mm-hmm. And then when the mares break water or they show the signs of sweating up and things like that, we bring them into the individual yards, which is where they inevitably fall.
And it certainly doesn't look like a prison, but... You have the watchtower, the floodlights and the fences, and it is with somebody watching over them 24-7.
24-7, yeah, no, it's a lot of these are very valuable horses, as you can imagine. So we just like to watch. We like to let it happen as naturally as possible, but there is always someone there if there's difficulties along the line.
Okay, well, let's check this newborn out. What are you looking for?
Just looking, normal size, confirmation of the foal. This is a good size foal. It's maybe a little weak behind, but that's just a normal foaling thing. It'll strengthen up in 2 and 3 days.
It's always incredible, isn't it, how they can stand straight away?
Yeah, within 20, 30 minutes of foaling, they're usually straight up and ready to go.
Nikki Joyce is in charge of the foaling area. What's the official name of the area that we're in, Nikki?
We call this the foaling unit.
The foaling unit. So you're like the head maternity nurse.
Yep, so we look after all the mums before and after they foal. Yep.
So who have you got here?
This is Brave Choice, owned by Yarraman, and this is a beautiful Hinchinbrook filly.
And how old?
She's 24 hours. Bridget is our resident vet, and this morning she's going to insure this foal for Yarman.
So we have to wait till the 24 hours, so the insurance company's happy it's sort of hit the ground running, as it were. We'll have a good look over it, check for any signs of broken ribs, infection, make sure it's nursing, make sure the legs are okay, the umbilicus is okay. Nikki does an IgG on all these foals, which is where we take a blood sample and make sure they got enough antibodies from the mare's colostrum that's going to help them fight any disease and things. Slightly different to a human in that the placenta, a human placenta passes a lot of them through, whereas a mare's doesn't. So if they miss that sort of first 12 hours worth of colostrum, they're pretty susceptible to problems down the road.
Okay, let me go for a quick feel down its ribs, which is really... Obviously we need to think about mum as well, just check she's bright and happy. Occasionally these mares hemorrhage, usually the more foals they have, the more prone to that they can be.
So, oh, so how many has she had?
Seven or eight
foals. Right, seven or eight foals.
Seven or eight, so yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of children. So how's she looking?
Yeah, she looks great, she looks great. Nikki keeps a really close eye on these, she'll make sure the heart rate's okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they can sort of bleed a bit, which can be quite catastrophic. The foals also, they've got such long legs, occasionally they put the legs through the uterus or damage a bit of gut on the way out, so they're things that we can sometimes require surgery to fix. And then just some damage around the back end, but we'll check her inside tomorrow.
Mm. She's obviously letting you touch the foal and hold the foal, is not protected.
When they have their first foal, they can be a bit, the hormones take over and they don't really know what's happening, and, you know, they know that there's this amazing natural instinct that they're right over the foal, but they can get a bit silly while they work out what to do, so we might put them in a box and let them get used to it and things. She's a bit of an old-timer.
You're very friendly, aren't you? Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of planning and investment to get to this point. First, the right mare needs to meet the right stallion. Just across the yard, the next generation are being conceived in the covering barn. Stud manager Shane Wright oversees the process.
The covering barn is basically where the stallion meets the mare to get served, so obviously to impregnate the mare. It's all done pretty naturally in here. The mare comes in. We have some protective gear for both her and for the stallion. The mare gets padded shoes on for her hind legs in case she kicks out. Obviously, we don't want our stallion to get hurt.
There's certainly no romance in the covering process. While stallion I Am Invincible waits in the wings, there's one important job being performed in the covering barn.
We have a teaser pony, which is basically we introduce to the mare before the stallion comes in. The teaser's pony is to make sure the mare is receptive to the male horse and that she's fully in season.
And your one is called Jimmy?
Ours is called Jimmy. Jimmy is a fighting soldier around here. He's been here longer than any of the staff, I think, at this stage. But, you know, he's very, very good at what he does. He's a little pony crossbreed. And he gets looked after very well here. He's a very important member of the team. He'll go up and he'll start sniffing at the mare, and when she's receptive, she'll show signs, as in she'll be leaning into him, maybe raising her tail to show that she's in season. We do a lot of vetting to make sure the mare's in season, but at the end of the day, it is nature, so the horses are better at telling it than we are. We just think of him as a very good wingman. He gets well fed, and he does get these one or two mares during the year, so he's quite happy. So he is. He's got a pretty good life here.
Actually, just watching Jimmy right now, and he can't actually mount the mare because he's too small. So that's why you use a pony?
Yes. It's much safer for everyone to use the pony.
Are these mares looked after in this process?
These mares are very well looked after. There is one or two restraints you can use. It's just purely releases endorphins for the mare, so it calms them right down. No different than in the wild, when a stallion is covering a mare, a stallion might grab a hole of a mare's neck in what we call a twitch. He'd actually bite her neck, and that's a place where the releases a lot of endorphins, so the mare, when he does that, seems to really relax and calm down. We've learned where they are, so we can grab the same areas that relaxes the mares too.
Over the years, many winners have been conceived in this covering barn. Arthur Mitchell owns the stud with his brother Harry.
We have two stallions here at Yarran Park. The eldest one, a 12-year-old, is I Am Invincible, and we have the younger one is Hinchinbrook. They've been booked out since Easter. They stand at, you know, considerably, you know, reasonably high fees, and they've been very popular.
Can you give us an idea of the fees?
I'm Invincible stands for 55,000, And Inchinbrook stands for 37,500.
In terms of matching the mare with the stallion, how much work goes on behind the scenes before the covering session?
I think in general nowadays people put a lot of thought into it. So, I mean, obviously the pedigree is important, so you're trying to match up the pedigree of the mare and the stallion. Obviously the cost of the stallion comes into play there too, so you might not want to spend a lot of money, or you might want to spend a lot of money on the mare. Then it comes down to the physical attributes of both the mare and the stallion. So, you know, you try to match up what you think. If you breed the mare to a certain stallion, what you hope will you, you know, something the foal will look like, and eventually the horse will look like.
Many of the horses bred here in the valley are to be exported overseas. In addition to traditional markets such as New Zealand, markets include Hong Kong, Singapore and China.
Probably only 6 or 7 years ago, we sold the three highest price yearlings at a Sydney Easter sale. We sold the record price Australasian yearling colt for $3 million, and we sold a Lingi sister, a filly, for $2.6 million. So in terms of a stud, to sell sort of yearlings in that bracket is pretty exciting.
Gee, there's some big numbers there. Co-owner of the Yarraman stud, Arthur Mitchell, ending that report from Karen Shosbury. Still to come today, rehearsing for the school musical via phone and webcam, and four-legged lawnmowers busting weeds on Queensland's Sunshine Coast.
Here they come. The moment Leo Phelan opens his gate, every one of his 19 kids come running, followed by their guardian Maremma sheepdogs, Ranger and Luna. It's the time of day the kids are reunited with their dairy goat mothers. Hello, I'm Jennifer Nichols. Leo Phelan is breeding up this herd for a very special job. They're needed as four-legged lawnmowers, tackling weeds that grow in difficult, steep terrain here on Queensland's Sunshine Coast.
Goats, for me, are a long-term passion, and look, we've evolved something else out of our business.
Leo Phelan is not new to land management. For the past 25 years, his company, Arbicare Queensland, has used traditional methods for tree and weed control, often involving the use of chemicals. Then 3 years ago, he decided to let his weed-whacking eco-goats have a go, and they've proved to be a winner.
We ended up getting a grant from Southeast Queensland Catchments, and we went on a bit of a journey to see how goats could manage unmaintained ex-agricultural landscapes. And they've done it really well. So it turned into a business for us. We now run three tribes of goats, and essentially one tribe really is the dairy on the farm, and two tribes are managing weeds for companies and people. And so goats, for me, I can see evolving into a landscape management tool that will become vital for us in areas that we can't traditionally go with, say, equipment. It's too hard for labour to get involved with. Wherever we've been in an agricultural enterprise, i.e. bananas, pawpaw and the like, where we've denuded those steep landscapes, we see weeds now colonising because we don't practice those industries anymore. If we can fence it, we can put goats on it. So really that's what it's about.
The eco-goat's first job involved tackling Japanese or Mexican sunflowers, smothering native vegetation on some of the steepest slopes of the Sunshine Coast's Blackall Range.
It was something that I really haven't had anything to do with. I was wondering how the heck I'm going to get through this biomass of weed, which was incredible. It was like 2 tonne to the acre. What we did was we managed them by what we call target browsing, using electro nets. And those electro nets and putting the goats in there, once they knew what the nets were, that was their boundary, the goats went to work. And, week by week, they just decimate pretty much anything that has flowers, fruits and leaves. And then they'll go on back once they've been through and taken out what their favourite forage is. They'll then go and decimate the plant, and that's how it works for us. And then we move them on to our next area that we'll browse. But once the plant comes back and starts to foliate again, we take them back and defoliate them again so that then sends the plant into physiological downward turn. And that is the idea, is continual browsing, creating pressures on the target weed. And that will then allow other plants to evolve.
In the test case of the Japanese sunflower, the weed whacking goats worked.
This is a plant that the goats thrive on. It's actually a high protein plant, and the goats just love it.
A large property group has since hired the goats to work on a development site in Brisbane.
They definitely have done the job. The particular company we're working for has identified another contract with us. We've had them down there for 3 months, and they're very happy with how the goats are working on their landscape.
Lantana and camphor laurel are poisonous to goats, but there are plenty of other weeds on their menu.
Fireweed is another plant that is, I guess, toxic to most monogastric and ruminant animals. Goats have the ability to browse plants like that, toxic plants. Not all toxic plants, but some toxic plants, because of the pH of their rumen and how they physically work. A lot of people will be thinking, yeah, but they're going to be producing viable seed out the back end. That's not the case. Goats basically have a low pH. They are able to desiccate the seed in their rumen prior to it being removed from the body and doesn't produce viable seed.
There's just a pleasure that you get out of watching kids play that I think is really particular to goats, don't you, Leo?
Most definitely. Look, if you're having a bad day, you go along and you say good day to Bailey, Ruby, any of those goats that, you know, you've been tainted with their love, they'll show that back.
Goats are never going to make Leo Phelan millions, but he says he feels richer for the experience.
I love this place. We're using animals for what they're meant to do. My passion now is to turn this place, Rosemount Farm, CSA, into a place that people can come along and enjoy how goats work in a small farm, a micro dairy, how to manage their place if they've got a lifestyle block. You know, rather than letting weeds grow on the place or wondering what the heck they can do, get some dairy goats. They'll bring you milk. They can bring you meat if that's the way you think about those things. But most of all, I think that they can be your lawnmower. There's lots of things that goats can do, but I think in our day, where we sit, in our rushed everyday lives that we have, I think they just bring me calm. Yeah.
Good afternoon, Bo Peep, Casey Lasker. Good afternoon, Humpty Dumpty, Harry Allen. Good afternoon, Millie Goodwin, Miss Muffet.
Rochelle Moore is the Deputy Principal of the Longreach School of Distance Education in Western Queensland. She's calling in the cast members involved in this year's school musical, Porridge.
Good afternoon, Wee Willie Winky, Alice Alexander.
Hello, I'm Blythe Moore. Staging a school musical when the 96 children involved are spread across an area twice the size of Victoria is no easy task. The teachers need to run through rehearsals via the telephone and webcam.
Good afternoon to the Robertson family.
12-year-old Elkie, 10-year-old Riley and 7-year-old Livia all have parts to play in the musical. They live on the family's property, Oriolton, near Hughenden, 230 kilometres away from their teachers.
I'm playing Papa Bear, which is the evil character in the play. It's very enjoyable. I have lots of fun playing the character.
So I'm playing Chief Inspector Drain. He's the leader of the police. He's also one of the main roles for Porridge. And I like doing him because you get to do a lot of yelling, get a real lot of expressive voice.
So we have the song there, so over to you.
Each Tuesday afternoon is the scheduled rehearsal time.
Keep back and stay calm, folks. There is nothing to worry about. Nobody panic. We have everything under control.
The kids will have just a handful of opportunities to rehearse in person with their classmates before the big performance in December. Riley does quite a bit of practice on his own.
Well, some nights I get my iPad and I've got my play recorded down onto there. So I listen to it and it kind of gets through my mind so I know it better.
Elkie says her dad has been a big help while she's been figuring out how to play her role, Papa Bear.
Ladies and gentlemen, I declare the porridge pot open for business.
The inspiration from Papa Bear was going on YouTube with my dad and looking up these scenes of The Godfather and copying his moves, so this and all these little moves to help with this character.
As owner of this little diner, I felt it was selfish to keep the porridge to ourselves and our friends.
Netta and Peter Robertson have been enjoying the opportunity to help get their children into character for the performance, but it makes for an extra busy time on the property.
Fantastic, mate. You've got to make sure you make eye contact, okay?
Look at the audience. Engage them. You've got to try to make them have fun.
Chaotic. This time of year is pretty crazy for us personally anyway with the business and the cattle work. I also play polo cross, so we spend a fair bit of time on the road. So the kids aren't always at home doing their practices. They've done their recordings on their iPads and they're able to listen to them at night, so it seeps into their subconscious. They also, when they're travelling, they're listening to their iPads all the time and practicing their parts that way. We get together as a family at dinner time and we will practice their lines as well, so they're quite rehearsed with them.
I want to spread the happiness around and bring a smile to every face with our humble food.
We've been known for Elkie's character at least, which is the baddie, to sit down and get some YouTube footage of The Godfather doing these scenes, and she's got developed this voice and this character which is just a classic, and we remind her of people that she knows that she can copy mannerisms of. So in this instance of this character, it's very much like Robert De Niro and my father, so she's mimicking her grandfather, which is just gorgeous.
But rest assured, the folk of Happy Valley will always be our top priority. After all, we are the Bears.
It's just so good for the kids. They're learning so much and just lapping up the experience that's been made available to them.
We can see you, Elkie. So you're on.
This is the third musical the Longreach School of Distance Education has organised. The job of teaching and directing belongs to Rochelle Moore.
So effort conquers distance is our school motto, and we certainly have achieved that in the past 2 years, so hoping we can do it again this year with Porridge.
Good afternoon, Big Bill, Ella Yore. Good afternoon, Jack Spratt, Caitlin Elliott.
They learn via the telephone and we use webcams, and it's Collaborate, a web conferencing tool, and so the children can actually see us on webcam and we read the script and do the script with them, and also singing. And then they have a DVD, which I have produced. So it's a bit like watching an aerobic video at home, and they learn the dances with me at home.
Ready? Tap that leg. 5, 6, 7, 8, and 1.
This week, Mrs. Moore is lucky enough to have some of the students in town for a mini school. This means they can practice their dance steps together.
Adding on the hips and adding on the arms. 5, 6, stomp step now. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Distance ed kids are something unique. They're just beautiful kids. It's an opportunity for them that they wouldn't get not attending school on a daily basis. So it's something different, and it's giving them an opportunity to do what our city kids get to do.
When we say 4, your arm is going to be pointing straight out in front. Straight out in front at me. Point it out at me.
And on the big night, it's not just the kids who have butterflies.
Extremely nerve-wracking, because when we come together for the first time, it's usually a little bit chaotic. But on the night, it is absolutely amazing.
All right, let's go from the stomp step, adding on the hips and adding on the arms. 5, 6, stomp step now. 1, 2, 3, 4.
And good luck to Rochelle Moore and the cast and crew involved in staging Porridge, the musical at the Longreach School of Distance Education. That's it from me today. Thanks to Tim Simons for technical production. We'll be back with more rural stories from right across the country next Monday. In the meantime, I'm Brett Worthington. Stay with us here on RN.